It is Danny and Gallant. If you want to suggest a name for the Flying Coach podcast, maybe we can rename it. Text it in 710-710. I'd like to hear that.
Cringe.
It's time for Blue 42. We've built her up. We have presented suspense and mystery as to who our special guest stepping in. It's Stacey Ross coming in for Blue 42.
Oh, snap.
This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, fight!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Stacey. How are you now?
I'm good, you guys. I'm so excited you've been building me up. It feels like old times when we're all in the building and we all get to announce our presence walking into the sports pit.
If you were in the building, the fact you're on the phone on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline kind of ruins the suspense there because nobody will think we're all in the building.
I know. It's unfortunate.
Question one for you, Stacey. We talked about some things that Danny Kelly had to say yesterday, and he's of the belief that the Seahawks need to start operating with the most effort they possibly can to win while Russell Wilson's here. How should Russell Wilson's future, and I guess perhaps uncertain future, affect Seattle's current decision-making?
Okay, so I'll start by saying I'm not like of the go for broke mindset. I know that my co-host Jake and I have disagreed about this one, where it's like, hey, you only have Russell Wilson for this long, so sell out to make a Super Bowl. And it's like, yes, but you're also selling out with the weapons you have right now. And I'll get to that in a second. I move forward as though Wilson will be here. And I still have to account for that. And I'll tell you why. He's under contract through 2023 when he's got a $40 million cap hit. Salary cap's going to be well over $200 million by then. So that sounds like a lot, but it's not really. Seattle has three options. You trade Wilson, restructure his deal, or stand pat and act like nothing's happening. Here's why they're in a tough spot. Seahawks fans can think get rid of Wilson next year and then get a quarterback on a rookie deal. But where do you find that guy? I don't know. Like, you can't tank. Do you want Kyle Trask? He was still a second rounder. Is that who you want?
Well,
move forward. I mean,
did you hear Bruce Arians? He said that Kyle Trask mentally is as sharp as Andrew Luck was as he was a rookie.
Yeah, I'm so sure. And Maura, I just want to make it clear. I know you're listening. If I'm wrong with this, or if Kyle Trask is a Hall of Famer, please help me go back and delete all of this. I never want to be held accountable for
you.
It. So I just think the logistics of moving on from Wilson are really, really tricky. So I'm not for like go for broke. Throw everything at the offense and make him happy this year and try to win a Super Bowl. I get the mindset. I get that you really, really have to take risks to win a Super Bowl. You also need a pretty solid defense. And when you have 60% of your cap or more tied up in offense, you have to make sacrifices elsewhere. And I don't know how many more sacrifices Seattle can afford there if they do want to win a championship. And they most certainly do.
I like this idea of the ways that Seattle can handle potential dissatisfaction. I kind of like the idea of pretending everything's cool. It's like, no, there's no problems here. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, next year, if Russell starts, like, yeah. Didn't that happen last year? Like, I don't think this is that big a deal, guys. Like, I just pretending like there's nothing going on, I think would actually be a pretty funny strategy when it came to dealing with potential unrest.
And let's be real. Wilson, I will be shocked if Wilson holds out. Like, if there's other players where I'd be like, hey, you got to do it. You got to go for it because your only chance of keeping this guy is winning a Super Bowl and you need a franchise quarterback. But I don't see Wilson holding out. Like, you could get knocked out of the wild card round. I think you're going to have a headache with it all off season while, Mark Rogers is talking with Adam Schefter again. But he's not holding out. It's just not who he is. Moral, once again, if I'm wrong about this, please help me go back and delete all of this.
Hold on, though, because my initial reaction is to agree with you completely, Stacey. I don't see that being in his nature. What if Aaron Rodgers gets his way? Like, what if Aaron Rodgers, by throwing the biggest fit and really digging his heels in? Because what we've seen is that Russell has watched what Tom Brady got in Tampa Bay and thought to himself, like, yeah, man, they should listen more to me. Like, they should. And if Aaron Rodgers gets in, like, maybe that's the way you have to do it. Like, let's dial this thing up to DEFCON 1. Let's go. Like, I'm really going to turn on full armaments, weapons grade, full blast armaments as I look to take aim at the franchise.
Now, this isn't a challenge for Wilson, and I don't mean it as a slight. I don't think he has that in him. Like, I think fundamentally, in the core of who he is and what he's focused on, like, he wants to be liked. And he also wants to be wanted, which I personally think is a root cause to, like, a lot of this issue. Like, he wants to be wanted. He wants to be, like, the one that they choose. But I also think that he cares very deeply about being liked, and like any of
legacy.
Us do. I don't think he's willing to sacrifice that.
I'm with you on that front, Stacey, 100%. And the idea of him holding out, which you brought up, he's not going to do it, you know? Like, that's why I just wonder about this idea of seeing the finish line with Russ. I guess I just can't see it myself.
Question two. What's your opinion on the Julio Jones deal? Are you pro Julio? Are you, hey, it's too much? Do you want them to trade for him?
I'm going to be really boring and say no. And it's in part because I'm just a really careful person. And I know for a fact I would make a horrible GM. I'd be like, oh, that's a lot to give up. Can I have like a take back kind of rule? I also know, like, I'm not of the party that says, oh, Julio's 32. He's injured. He's not going to make you better. It's Julio Jones. He has been maybe the best receiver of the past decade. He absolutely makes you even more of a Super Bowl contender. Like, I know what you are giving up, the possibility of what you're giving up and not trading for him. But if you are a team, like, let's just say, so I'll start by saying his cap hit or his base salary goes down next year and the year after. So that's good, but it's still $11 million. That's a lot. And like I said, Seattle already has 2/3 of its cap almost dedicated to offense. That's only going to go up because you're going to have to extend DK Metcalf. He's going to be looking to get paid because he's DK Metcalf and he has a lot of strawberry milk to buy. So if you're a team with 3 of the top paid receivers, chances are you've got shortcomings elsewhere. It's like I said, like, I just don't, you know, when you're doing something that it's going to cost you elsewhere. And once again, I don't know where else they can afford to lose on defense. And I am so tired of seeing people say, oh, well, they can find another Richard Sherman. No, you can't. You won't. You're not going to find another Richard Sherman. It is hard to find Hall of Fame caliber talent in the 5th round and 6th round. And there's a reason that it's a fun trivia question for people like Sherman and Tom Brady.
The thing that you brought up a little bit earlier, all that they have resource-wise dedicated to the offense, what is it, 60% or more? I feel like that's another reason, too. You got to have some balance on this team.
Nah.
Yeah. No, nah. You do, Danny. Here's the thing. You don't have to do it if you also have solid. The reason that some teams are able to not really spend on one side of the ball is usually because they've got some pretty solid rookies or they've struck gold on guys that came back and had a second chance. So, like, when Leonard Floyd went to the Rams defense, he was a bust considering that he was a higher pick with Chicago, went there, had a fantastic year. And I know a lot of his sacks came against one team and one quarterback, still had a really solid year. Or you have Tampa Bay where they've had really great guys, James White, Vita Vea. They were first round picks that they took playing on rookie deals. So, I mean, I'm just saying Seattle hasn't had a great track record since their Legion of Boom days of finding those guys. Like, who's still here is from that group of, like, 4 defensive backs that they took in that draft when they were trying to rebuild the Legion of Boom? No one.
Nobody.
Became a regular starter.
They gone. Last one was Delano Hill, and he's in Carolina.
It's actually Lano. It's Lano Hill.
He didn't earn the right to change his name while he was. No, that's
right.
Terrible
okay,
to say.
Okay.
That's not true. I like Lano. That was terrible. See what you made me do?
Sorry.
That was absolutely awful.
That was all you.
You could be just fine with young, hungry defensive players. Get a bunch of guys out there to run around and hit people. You don't need to spend money on defense.
I had a historically bad defense the first half of last year, Daddy. So.
And then it got better. Just run around and hit some people.
Against
Come on.
Offices.
Yeah. Some ham sandwich quarterbacks. That's probably mean, too, though. Question 3. This sort of lends itself to what we were just talking about, but you talked about this yesterday, was offense really the big issue that held Seattle back in the playoffs this past year?
Yes, But I'll say, so we were having a debate about the offensive line, about whether the offensive line costs you, or just a conversation about personnel. Like, do they need to be better on offense? Who do they need to add? What piece are they missing? And so Jake and I were having a debate about whether Julio Jones could be that piece. And I think I settled on saying, I don't think it was a personnel issue overall. Like, if I'm divvying up the blame pie, I'm not putting a big portion of it on personnel when it comes to offense. I think the bigger issue on offense was just that they felt of two minds all season long. They were a high-flying passing offense, didn't adjust. Pete Carroll pulls them back, and then they feel like they're moving in different directions. It feels like Carroll has one idea of how they should play. Russell Wilson and Schottenheimer have another idea, and they never all make it come together. They never use Carson enough to beat some of those two high looks, which is maybe what Carroll would have wanted. And then they still don't really come up with any smart passing attacks to really diversify that group. I mean, like, they didn't really utilize the tight ends. I know you didn't have the best pool of tight ends to work with, but, like, you also barely had any targets for them. So it felt more like they were directionless and making mistakes, and less like there was one piece that they were just missing on offense. Like, if they only had an all-pro receiver, it would have fixed it. I don't think an all-pro receiver fixes your problems from last year. I think your problems from last year are with your offensive coordinator and quarterback and your head coach being on two different pages about what they wanted to do.
Well, that ruined my follow-up, because I was going to point out that I just heard that there was too much money being spent on the offensive side of the ball, and then that the offense was a problem in the playoffs. But you seem to think that they have addressed that, hopefully, by changing the disconnect between the coordinator and the coach.
It's not even that they've... Yes, and what I mean by that is, like, I think that had you fixed those problems last year, you would have, should have gotten even further with the team you had. Like, you had two 1,000-yard receivers. You had Russell Wilson. You had a pretty solid offensive line. They made big mistakes. I mean, the offense fell apart in the second half. We all saw it. It was a ticking time bomb. It was going to collapse even more. They played the best defense in the playoffs. I mean, it wasn't a pretty picture, but, like, that group could have gotten farther if they were just on the same page. There were so many frustrating mistakes that were avoidable rather than just, like, you have the wrong guy.
I wonder about how much they have done to change all of those things in the offseason outside of, hey, next year it's just going to be better. And how much going into this coming season is a matter of these guys need to improve on either side of the football, and how much improvement do you actually expect?
How much do I actually expect on either side of the football?
Yes.
I think on offense, I have much higher expectations. I think that the second half performance on defense was really exciting. I think there were facets to it that were completely legit. I also think they were playing awful offenses, like bottom third of the league offenses. And I think that they entered this season still with some very real problems. Like, I don't think they suddenly went away. I think they're going to rear their head again at the beginning of the season. And I think they're going to rear their head when they have kind of a more mixed group of offenses they're playing, right? It's not like you're knocking out all the good ones first and all the bad ones later, kind of like you did last year. Like, you've got a challenge throughout the course of your 17 or 18 now weeks. So my expectations are much higher on offense. I think that they have taken steps forward on both sides of the ball to give them a really good shot to improve, though. Like, the expectations are higher, but also the baseline of what they're working with, in my mind, is improved.
Have you ever thought about how weird that expression is, rear their head? And usually it said rear their ugly head. It's always struck me as the most bizarre construction of the English language.
Is it about snakes?
I have no idea what it's from, but to rear your head, because you're basically saying... It's like rear, like that's your butt, right? You're rearing your head. Like, it seems to me that if you reared your head, it would be to create a situation that people often accuse you of having if you're completely clueless. Like, your head is lodged in a certain place that it shouldn't be, and it's preventing you from thinking accurately. But I've always just been struck by how weird that construction. It's gonna rear its head. It's gonna rear its head.
Yeah, Danny, I've never thought about it.
Do you think you'll ever think about it again,
now,
or you will thankfully sink back into
bed?
She is Stacey Rossi. Here's a different one, and this will end. It was Blue 42. She's nice enough to join us. Did you know that Edmonton's CFL team changed its nickname?
No.
It did. It used to be the Edmonton Eskimos, which is, for many of the same reasons Native American mascots and nicknames of other sports have fallen out of favor. It was specifically disrespectful to Inuit communities and others, other tribes and First Peoples and First Peoples nations that are in the area. So they changed it, but they just changed it. They didn't go through a whole, they didn't call themselves the Eskimo football team for 2 years. They're now just the Eskimo Elks, and they have a pretty cool looking helmet with some horns that are painted on the sides. They're just going to be the Edmonton Elks. They're just going to be the Edmonton Elks.
Like, wait.
No, it's the Edmonton Elks.
Right.
I screwed that up. I completely butchered the presentation.
Okay.
They're going to be the Edmonton Elks without making a big to-do over it. And I was like, huh, so easy. Why can't the Washington football team do that?
Yeah, they didn't go with Edmonton team for 2 years. That's shocking.
No, they didn't. They didn't have to drag the owner over hot coals to get him to give up the ghost on it. None of that sort of stuff.
Huh, what a thought.
Stacey, it's fun to talk to you. We look forward to the next time in which you will rear your head in Blue 42 and join us.
Oh my God.
Bye.
I am curious as to where the origin of that came now that you've asked about it. And I looked it up and I actually can't find it. There's no specific origin. I guess there's something that took place in the 1800s about a rebellion, but no.
Well, there's the respect. He reared back. But even that has always seemed reared back.
That
I guess it
sounds
like
different, though. Right?
Casting your weight backwards and then catapulting yourself forward. I don't know. It's always struck me as a weird. I've never understood why you would rear an ugly head.
Apparently, the first time it was used in recorded form was in Anthony Trollope's book Barchester Towers from 1857. Rebellion had already reared her hideous head.
Oh, it was even worse back then.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to the Mariners general manager, Jerry Dipoto. Our weekly visit with him comes up at 8:30. And it does seem that many of our conversations with him have coincided with valleys in this season, which is kind of an unfair, because there have certainly been bright moments. I mean, just as recently, this past week, they had a great week. And even losing the final two games of their series against Oakland, this was a successful homestand. You went 5-2. Like, there are a lot of reasons to feel really good. You're continuing to pitch pretty well. They had two bad innings over that series against Oakland. They had two bad innings, the seventh inning on Tuesday and the third inning yesterday. And other than that, they played the A's toe-to-toe and even had the advantage.
There have been some struggles along the way. The batting struggles are still a thing, not just for Jared Kelnick, for a lot of the lineup. There have been some good things, though, and since Ty France has come back into the lineup, at the very least, he has been able, for the most part, to get hits, maybe not last night. The other problem is the injuries. I mean, they just keep rearing their ugly head, Danny. Justin Dunn now with shoulder discomfort. Kyle Lewis needing a second opinion on his knee and being down in the dumps per Scott Service. I don't know if that makes me feel like there's a different diagnosis coming, unless it's going to be potentially a worse one as he goes to get that second opinion about his banged up meniscus.
Yeah, let's start with Justin Dunn. Here is Scott Service, the Mariners manager. Justin Dunn went on the 10-day injured list with shoulder soreness. Shoulders are ominous when it comes to pitchers. It's not quite as ominous as it used to be 10 years ago, but still, like, that is worrisome and not something to be shrugged off. Here's Scott Service on Justin Dunn's injury.
Yeah, Justin was, out throwing yesterday, felt a little something in the back of it. Didn't think it was going to be that big of an issue. Got out to play catch today and kind of shut himself down. Did not feel right there. I don't think it's going to be anything. I'll keep my fingers crossed. Maybe one of those who just missed his one start. We're able to calm it down because talking to our training staff, the strength is good. Everything like that is not an issue there. So maybe just a little, inflammation in there, and hopefully we can calm it down and he only misses one start, but I'm not sure.
You want to make sure you're being absolutely as careful as possible with any of these, but when they pop up as much as they do, you're forced to do things that potentially put other players, I guess, at risk. You're putting guys in to bullpen starts. Perhaps that takes place again. It's really difficult to watch them try to navigate through it because it feels like they are running out of the resources to do it. And it's not something to get mad about because you shouldn't expect them to really have the resources right now.
They're dealing with a wave of injuries at a specific spot, the pitching. And it would tax any team, and it's a young team. So they've had a rash of it. We will really hope that it is just one start for Justin Dunn, because having to make do, they've just gotten to the point where they don't expect to have bullpen starts anymore. And they don't really have another person to tap into. Margavichus, LJ Newsome, James Paxton have all been lost. Those are starters, potential starters, that have been lost for the foreseeable future. We don't know a timeline for Margavichus or for LJ Newsome. We know that James Paxton's done for the year. The Mariners have weathered that really well. Like, all things considered, they've weathered the storm of injuries. What they really need is to start hitting. What they really need is to goose that part of the lineup. And that is a reasonable expectation given how poorly they've hit for the first third of this season. But that also, we're getting to the point where, okay, given what we've seen, it's harder to think. It looks like Murphy's heating up and hitting the ball harder. Taylor Trammell continued to hit the ball sharply yesterday, but they didn't score any runs. Nope. Chaminade is a good pitcher. They didn't score any runs. And Kyle Lewis now being out and Jared Kelnick getting a day off, hopefully that providing a bit of a rest. Last time he got a day off, he came back and homered the next game. So we'll see about all. But all of those things, they're facing some real challenges right now to try and compensate for the injuries they've had among their starting pitching.
Yeah, and that's really difficult to figure out as you continue to basically, I think, just do the only things you can, which is basically to try to MacGyver your way out of it with the bullpen starts and things like that. You mentioned the hitting a moment ago. Are you seeing signs of progress from guys that we don't expect on a regular basis to get hits? Guys not named Mitch Haniger, guys not named Ty France.
I think Tom Murphy's hitting the ball better. I think Tom Murphy's hitting the ball better, and J.P. Crawford has become one of the more steady bats in your lineup.
Which is why he's your leadoff guy now.
You feel really good, and Ty France is hitting the cover off the ball. Like, those are three very, very positive signs. I'm not going to be waiting on pins and needles to see if Jack Mayfield starts hitting. I'm not going to be waiting on, like, those are guys that it's a matter of when your regulars get back and when Dylan Moore and Evan White come back, both of whom will probably need some rehab time. Moore is going to be back sooner than White. Both of those guys, I will, when they get back, wondering, okay, can you start getting some offense from them, because you really do need it. You really do need that. The pitching has more than held its own considering the injuries. We've got Jerry DePoto, Mariners GM, is going to join us for his weekly visit. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We're doing a little bit of hand-wringing there over the Seattle Mariners and the situation that they find themselves in. The other thing, though, man, if you look around the American League, specifically, no one's separated from the pack. And no one. It is incredibly wide open. And for a Mariners team that's young, that's the best news for a young team. Like, you always want to hold out hope and room for possibility of, hey, things can click. You can get into place. What has Jerry told us this entire year? The development of young players is not linear. The development of young players is not step-by-step incremental progress. Young players make leaps. And it's just a question of when you get to that point when they make a leap. And in a year like this where there's not much separation, hey, that means if you get hot and it clicks for you, you've still got time and there's room. Nobody's so far out in front that you can't catch them, Paul.
Right. The American League West is wide open. I mean,
who's the best team?
I think Houston, it's the Astros, because
Houston probably.
I mean, what you've seen out of the A's in the six games that the Mariners have played them, have you been convinced that that team is significantly better than Seattle? I'm not. I mean, no, Matt Chapman's either. Supposed to be one of their best players, right? He stinks now.
He's awful.
What happened?
I have no idea.
It's so strange.
On a third of his at-bats. He's striking out on one third of his at-bats. It is shocking, and it's puzzling to watch. I love that dude as a player, and it's baffling to watch that happen.
Yeah, that used to be one of the better players in the American League, and now all of a sudden, what? What's going on there? So, yeah, I really wonder about that. And honestly, the A's, if you take away that 13-game winning streak that they had, they're right back in the same place where the Seattle Mariners probably are right now, if it's a little bit of a more realistic stretch that they were going on, 7-6, because they had that brutal start to their year. Is it the Tampa Bay Rays? I mean, they traded their best player. They have the best record in the American League right now, but they got rid of Blake Snell this offseason. It's weird the way that it has played out. I'm not expecting anything, you know, out of the Mariners the rest of the way. But you're right in that they are not in a spot where they are going to be at the way back of the pack and very clearly in the midst of a rebuild.
That they haven't lost touch with the pack because everybody's kind of clumped in together. That creates opportunities. It also kind of creates a question of, okay, which direction do you go? You don't, for lack of a better term, decide you're a seller. Are you necessarily a buyer, though? That's probably not the right position for this team where it is in the development curve. You still end up looking and watching for your player's growth. You hope that Jared Kelnick grows into and becomes a big part of your lineup, especially with Kyle Lewis out here. And then you try to continue weathering the storm of injuries, which has predominantly hit your pitching staff, which has been very, very tough to wrestle with. And that has been something that you've had to deal with. All of those things are a real struggle and a real challenge right now.
Yeah. Is it wishful thinking, hoping that or expecting that the injuries will not be as much of a problem at some point this year? It's so random.
You can't do anything but hope when it comes to injuries. I don't believe in being cursed or anything like that. And we are joined now by Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto, who's with us for the weekly visit. And we won't ask you how to avoid injuries, Jerry, because I don't think any team has solved that riddle. You just are subject to them occasionally. But we really do appreciate you joining us today.
Oh, you got it, guys.
I guess kind of just in general, to start with an update, we had Justin Dunn, who missed a start or may miss his next start, placed on the 10-day injured list, kind of added to a list of guys. You guys have really been stung along the pitching staff specifically with injuries this year.
Yeah, I think we're cursed. I'm playing with you on the intro. But, you know, we have had a really tough couple of months, and we've talked about it before. It's I guess, a thing with the league around us as well. This has been a really tough year for injuries, and all the teams are experiencing it. And one of our general patterns of thought this year has been, you know, can the team that stays healthiest has a chance among that middle pack, has a chance to wind up, you know, in the postseason at the end. You just have your best players on the field for the longest. And we've been unable to do that, but hopefully we're able to turn the ship around in the second half and get some of these guys back and playing well.
We saw yesterday that Kyle Lewis might be looking at a second opinion on his meniscus, and Scott Service had said yesterday he's feeling really down. Should we expect a prolonged absence from Lewis?
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help. And, you know, and Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
That's given an opportunity for Taylor Trammell to come back up and get into the lineup. He's been playing primarily left field, or will play primarily left field, though he was in center last night. And you saw right away that maybe the trip down to the minors gave a boost to his confidence, because he's certainly been hitting the ball hard since he came back up.
You know, that's one of the things that you can do with sending a player back to AAA is it's not always for the magical fix, you know, the swing fix, visit with the hitting coach who gets them right. You know, the old legends, send them back and they'll get them right in AAA. Mostly it's just going back and remember all the things you do well and finding your confidence and, you know, finding the barrel of the bat consistently, which Taylor did from the moment he arrived in Tacoma. And, you know, a couple of weeks, two or three weeks in Tacoma resulted in a different level of confidence when he steps in the box, much like when we broke spring training. And, you know, I really like the at-bats he's taken. Faced some really tough left-hand pitching in the last 2 days, especially with guys like Manaea and Diekman. And he's hanging in there and he's hitting the ball hard. And we've seen what Taylor can do when he's in a good place and the tools play. He's such a fun player to watch. And I was thrilled when I saw, you know, how he looked in the box, because it was very different than 3 weeks ago when he left. And that's an encouraging thing. That's what player development's about.
Jerry, you've talked before with us about kind of the approach at the plate and having, when guys swing, having a pitch that you can do some damage with. There's been a lot of conversation about the average this year, but I was looking at the home runs, because while the average is among the lower teams, the collective team average, your guys' power numbers are fairly high in comparison. I mean, it's you're middle of the pack in terms of overall home runs. And I wondered, not that it's a design to have a lower average, but if the fact that your team's power numbers are where they are is a reflection that guys are, when they swing and make contact, are doing damage with the pitches they hit.
Yes, and no. I think one of the, you know, an alternative explanation is we just have players who have real ability. I mean, they do tend to flow up and down. But the approach that you talked about, Danny, is that's generally what we preach, is, you know, is get a good pitch to hit, let those balls be center, and then do damage. And they're doing that for the most part. You know, but we don't want to be a 200 hitting team. And I don't think our hitters are 200 hitters. So it's the design itself is meant to produce, you know, that impact results, powerful results. And we think over time, the batting average is going to improve. Some of it's going to improve by harder contact on balls that are in play. And, you know, the harder contact on balls in play right now, that is where, you know, for most of the players individually that we have who are struggling, and for us collectively as a team, we have had very little, you know, we'd call it BABIP luck. When we put the ball in play, we're not really experiencing good results, which, you know, tends to even out over time. And again, just like with the injury bug, I'm hoping that in the second half, you know, our BABIP luck starts to turn a little bit.
The guy who statistically in baseball has the worst BABIP luck is Jared Kelnick. It's been tough for him because he has been making contact, and we've seen some at-bats where you feel, hey, look, he's got a chance, particularly a couple of days ago against the A's, but he gets the off day yesterday. How are you feeling about where he's at right now? Because obviously, this is a pretty difficult stretch for him, and we did see from Taylor Trammell, him going back down and coming back up, that he is able to perhaps learn a couple of things from going down and facing a lower level of pitching.
You know, and anything's possible as it's necessary, but I will say this about J.K. He's not going to bat at 120 for the year. I'd say he's much better than that on a skill level. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I think prior to this homestand, especially the series with the A's, Jared's at bats, I mean, really good. And he's hitting the ball hard and he's doing all the right things. And if you would have told me that, you know, 2.5 weeks into his major league career, he was going to have a 9% walk rate and a 25% strikeout rate, I'd say, sign me up. This is going to go really well. And, you know, for a rookie in this league at his age with his experience, now, he is doing the right things, and, you know, it's just not resulting in hits. And it's the first time he's ever gone through this in his life. And, you know, it's not a particularly long period, you know, 80 at bats or 80 plate appearances over the course of, you know, 3-ish weeks. That's not going to define who he is. But again, the underlying information suggests good things. He's drawing about an average walk rate. He's striking out a little more than the average player in his first 80 plate appearances. That would almost be defined as ideal in the process you want to see. And I think the results will catch up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought the two walks he took in the A's series, in I think it was the first game of the A's series, were especially telling that, hey, he hasn't lost sight of the strike zone. He's not chasing things. He's not looking after things. But, man, it's tough to balance that, hey, the process is good, and keep everyone and maybe even Jared from focusing on the results. What are you seeing from his body language and how he's playing?
You can see the frustration starting to build up, especially with this last series with the A's. And it's frustrating for a player who is used to, I mean, he's not used to getting a hit a night. Mm-hmm. He's used to getting multiples. And, you know, for him to go out and go through a stretch like this where he's now, you know, it's a dry spell north of 20 plate appearances. I was proud of him in the first game of the Oakland series for going up there and taking his walks. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's it's the key. That's how you get out of these things, is you see pitches. And, you know, I'm going to use Jake Fraley as an example. In spring training, if you recall, the first week or 10 days of spring training, it couldn't have been going too much worse for Jake. And, you know, he wasn't hitting, he wasn't getting on base, there wasn't a lot going on, you know, positively for him. And he just started tracking pitches. He started forcing the pitcher to throw it over the heart of the plate. And then lo and behold, over the last 3 weeks of spring training, he was really good and played his way onto the team. And I think that's generally how you get out of it. And if you look at the best hitters in the world, when they get in their slumps, that's what they do, is they see more pitches until they feel comfortable. And once they feel comfortable with their approach, the hits start to come again. And you know, I don't think that Jared Kelenic is going to be a streaky major league hitter. He's a very consistent hitter with a good approach. He's just right now a young player who's trying to figure out how to slow it down a little bit. And my guess is he will sooner than later.
Jerry, it's always great to talk to you, and we appreciate it very much, and we'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, guys.
That is Jerry DePoto, our weekly talk with the Mariners general manager, and not encouraging news when it comes to Kyle Lewis. Hope that he will have him back this year, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be a matter of in the next week or two. We'll react to more of what we heard, especially the belief in Jared Kelenic's process. You still got the faith. That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We just spoke with Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto. Check it out on the Danny and Gallant podcast later to hear the entirety of the interview. Danny, it does not sound good when it comes to Kyle Lewis and his short-term, long-term prognosis this season with the Seattle Mariners. Here's what Jerry DePoto had to say about his status.
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help. And, you know, and Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
It's terrible news. There's no way that you would say, and it's playing the long-term sort of projection here. It's the right decision. There's a number of athletes. Go talk to Brandon Roy about what happens when you have a meniscus injury and you have a quick surgery done. Usually it involves removing the meniscus if there's a tear and something that's causing discomfort. And then you're able to come back within a couple weeks, but the meniscus does play an important function in the knee, and it serves in many ways as a shock absorber, and it can shorten the overall term of your career. I don't know what's going on inside of Kyle Lewis's knee specifically. I do know that you've seen a number of players play through discomfort or take a more short-term remedy and have that coming at a long-term cost. When I hear that and know that Kyle Lewis is seeking a second opinion, he's trying to make the best decision for himself. And Jerry even said that later, that it's the player's decision what they do with their body. You want him to make the better long-term decision, especially because he's looked really good in center field. Like that's that. I think everybody wondered, was he going to get that sort of range and athleticism and be able to play like that after the knee injury. It's a bummer that the injury happened, but don't let sort of the impatience that comes from having his development slowed in the first place compound it by making you choose a path that would compromise sort of his long-term prospects.
Some organizations across sports are going to put pressure on an athlete to get back on the field as soon as possible. And one of the benefits, I think, of the Mariners being where they're at this year is I don't think there's even a slight potential for that. And also just based off the way that Jerry described it with us too, they are going to take their sweet time with it. And they should. What you mentioned with Brandon Roy, just hearing that name makes me terrified. Well, honestly, about what could potentially be up. And you just factor all the injuries that he has had on that right knee. You got to be as careful as possible with this. Would you be upset, Danny? I mean, we'd all be upset for Kyle, I think, personally. But if they were to shut him down the rest of the year, would you be upset with that? Because it feels like that's at least in the realm of possibilities.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be bummed. But that doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do. I think the best move is to choose what will have Kyle Lewis have the longest possible career. Like, that's what I would advise him. If I was his agent or if I was his teammate, is to say, you've got a long career ahead of you. Like, you were the rookie of the year last year. Don't let impatience compromise what should be a long and incredible career. Like, you've come this far and made it back. And if this is the same thing that happened in spring training and you sat down for a month and it felt better, and now you came back and played for a month and a half and the same thing happened again, take a different step. Don't do the same thing. Don't nurse your way through a season in which, in all honesty, nobody expected the Mariners to make the playoffs. In fact, most people had them winning fewer than 80 games. Don't nurse your way through a season if that comes at a cost on the back of it. Am I bummed? Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge bummer. It was a huge bummer when he hurt his knee. But don't throw good money after bad is an expression that they'll use in real estate. Like, if you, hey, it's already been tough. Don't make a decision that values the short term at the expense of the long term.
Are you in the slightest nervous about that? Because I'm not, actually. I don't think that they would make a move in the short term at the expense of the long.
No, it's his right. Decision. He's the one that will ultimately have to say. But I don't think that they'll push in that direction. And I think that right now, if that means you have more Taylor Trammell, and it does,
less pressure on him, that's for sure.
On
Trammell,
on Taylor
about being potentially sent back down.
Yes, and yes, less pressure on being sent back down. More pressure on Kelnick, maybe.
And
Kelnick will be playing in center. Kelnick will be playing in center, and you've also got some uncertainty about kind of how he's coming through this slump.
Right, and Jerry talked about that. You'll hear what he had to say about Kelnick, and if there's potential that he gets sent back down again next, right here, 710 ESPN Seattle.